Good afternoon. Oh my God, I almost said good morning. What's up? Elliot Lane, Javier Haas here. Benzinga's Cannabis Insider, bringing you the best executives in the space. I'm pretty stoked about today. We are bringing on an absolute leader in brands. Super excited to chat with Caroline.
Sorry. You got a tweet today.
Boo. No, I'm just kidding. That was great, Javi. Awesome. Y'all, welcome in. Benzinga's Cannabis Insider. Let's get started. You know that last part said cannabis stocks, and boy, oh boy, the last week and a half have we had cannabis stocks to talk about, Javier. My God. What a week already.
My God. Week and a half? What do you mean?
That's a lot. Listen, I get off daily yesterday. If you don't listen to Cannabis Daily, you should. 5 minutes every morning talking about what's happening in cannabis so far that day. Right after I get off, what happens, Javier? What happens? Cresco and Columbia Care call off their merger. Dunzo. No more waiting for that to happen.
Are you surprised at all? I mean, this is something that seemed to be zero surprising for the market. In fact, both stocks reacted.
They're up. Positively. Yeah, they're both up. Brandon Lee, come on, man. Love yourself some cannabis stonks. Get out of here. Come on. The beautiful, eh? read the humor. Read the humor. But that said, Javi, both stocks up. Listen, I'm going to be honest here. No financial advice in this show. This is just our take on the markets for your insights. I love Columbia Care. I'm a big fan of Columbia Care. When they decided to get bought out by Cresco Labs, I was like, okay, that's fine. We like M&A in the space.
It was a good price tag. Can I do something?
It was.
I need to change our spots. Whoop. What's that?
We're throwing Javi for a loop. If you're watching right now, Javi always has to be on his side. If you're listening later, you have no idea what just happened. But that said, listen, both stocks are acting positively. I love Columbia Care. I love their retail strategy. I think it's one of the best in the game. And I've always had respect for Nick Vita, Jesse Channon, and the C-suites over there. So that said, I'm not too terribly grief-stricken about this. But that said, what happened and why it happened is not good. Right. So that does need to be acknowledged. But however, the company's not merging does present another opportunity for investors. What are your thoughts on it, Javi?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, honestly, there wasn't a lot of substance in the press release. We have reached out to both Cresco and Columbia Care, so we'll hear more about them soon on Benzinga.com/cannabis. Of course, you know, right now, all they said is you know, the decision was made because it made more sense for the long term, keeping in mind the evolving landscape in the cannabis industry. They also, you know, part of this deal also entailed selling certain assets in New York, Illinois, and Massachusetts to a company owned by Diddy, the rapper, Sean Diddy Combs, which was also terminated.
That's a bummer. I thought they were going to be a really cool company too, though, I will say. Yeah. They'll find.
And I met the guys behind Diddy's company, and honestly, I was looking forward to seeing what they had in store for this new venture. But I'm
they'll
sure
pop up again
around and find some other assets. There is no lack of assets for sale in the cannabis industry. That we know for a fact.
You coy little man. You coy man. But I agree. Brandon Lee, a lot of my clients are publicly traded. MSOs and quite a few are imploding this year. It's interesting, though, while you're not incorrect, there are a lot that are starting to reshape their balance sheets. It was a note today. I forget which analyst actually might have right here is Canaccord. Said investors will continue to prioritize overall balance sheet health over short-term operational performance.
I mean, they should. At the very least, they should.
Agreed. Right at this point. Agreed, man. And I think you're seeing companies they've been focusing on it for several quarters now. So I think we are starting to see the fruits of that, albeit it was a generally not bad quarter, but so far just unimpressive, I think is what you would say. Javi.
Without peeping or cheating, so don't scroll up in the news document. Can you guess Which are the two MSOs paying the most taxes?
Paying the most taxes?
Yep.
As in like they owe the most taxes?
No, they paid the most taxes. So here's, so this is a report, right, from our good friend Pablo Swanich's new firm, Swanich and Associates. Big shout out.
Trulieve.
They looked, woo, that was one of them. That was very good. They looked at 16 MSOs and reviewed. They came to the conclusion that they collectively paid an astounding $761 million in income taxes in calendar year 2022.
Oh, my God.
One of the companies leading the pack is, in fact, truly TCNNF with $147 million in tax payments. Which is the other company, Mr. Lane?
I mean, it's right there on the screen. It's
oh.
I can't lie to you. It's right there. But at least I got one right. But that's crazy. $761 million in taxes?
Yeah.
Income taxes.
$6 million Curaleaf. $147 for Trulieve. The three largest MSOs, including Green Thumb Industries, GTBIF, accounted for 55% of the share of the total income taxes paid within the group of these 16 MSOs.
Ouch. That is an ouchie, man. So does that change? Does that change with rescheduling? That tax specifically?
It should. It should. Okay. It also like, so these tax numbers also reflect the different accounting practices for companies, right? Because navigating the financial system in general for cannabis in the US is so complex, different companies have different methodologies for reporting, right? It's not as standard as it is for like Apple or something, right?
Hold on. This is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm reading through your notes here. Mm-hmm. Tilt Holdings. Oh. Exempt from 280E due to its hardware accessories business. Is that right?
Let's see. Is that right? That is an interesting... I mean, maybe for their business, for that specific
business. Oh, for that specific business. That makes more sense. But I don't know. I'd love to be corrected in the chat. That seems not right to me. Anyway... looking at Steve Bourne, thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate you. Where are these companies looking to cut costs to balance said balance sheets? Finding in Canada, the larger companies are sacrificing skilled labor versus management fees. I think, now listen, I think he's correct. However, that's not all they're doing, right? A lot of these companies expanded too quickly, operationally, asset-wise, and human capital wise, and they are rebalancing all of it. Now, it is their fault. Mm-hmm. I said this last week and I'll say it again. It's their fault that they expanded too quickly and that these people are losing their jobs now. But that being said,
responsibility, right? Not just with their employees, but also with their investors.
But
right?
That said, it is all over the balance sheet. I think that's for sure true. Sorry, Javi, keep going.
No. I mean, like a fiduciary responsibility to investors also implies that when you get a bunch of money, you don't necessarily go out and spend it all at once, right? So they're definitely cutting the workforce. They're divesting underperforming assets. Canadian companies especially are selling many of their US-based assets. They're also looking for efficiencies, definitely, you know, taking a harder look at their operational costs to streamline the operations, because what we saw first was like just a rush, right? Like a bunch of companies in Canada and some in America got a bunch of money and they just were like, okay, let's grow, right? And maybe they didn't put enough thought into the organizational structure, into synergies, into efficiencies, right? The scenario was set in a way where, okay, like, you know, MSO still have to establish state, like single state presences, and then figure out how to make all that work within a large holding company that is publicly traded. So I think they're growing up, right? They're maturing and they're realizing, okay, we need
they're being forced to mature, but yes, they are mature. They had no choice. It was mature or get out.
Who chooses to mature? Excuse me. Like, did you ever go like, you know what? I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to
be in the business. Yeah. I don't want to go into receivership. Yeah. Awesome. Javier, we always take too long in the rapid fire, and I want to have a really strong, really good time left for Caroline. So quick rapid fire.
Okay, big shout out to Avicanna, AVCNF, finalizing the previously announced acquisition of medical cannabis by Shoppers' business from Shoppers Drug Mart. This is an online platform that has the biggest share in online sales for medical cannabis in Canada. They now rebranded as mymedi.ca. They have about 200 unique products and 35 brands from various Canadian licensed producers.
Nice.
Very interesting story with Seth Rogen and Bill Gates discussing Alzheimer's, mental health, and cannabis in Microsoft's new podcast. You can go to benzinga.com/cannabis to check out what happened in the podcast after our podcast. And a huge shout out to my good friend Pedro, the Latin rapper, a cappella, super well known, went uber viral this last week, taking some punches, doing like a diss track for famed rapper Residente. And he launched his own cannabis pre-roll brand in the US, I think for now only in New York, in the state of New York, called Los Porros de Don Pedro, in partnership with Yerba de la Buena, which is a Latino-owned delivery service. So big shout out to a cappella.
Nice. For all your news throughout the day, benzinga.com/cannabis, or what I do, download the Benzinga app, scroll over to the cannabis section, and just it's a straight news feed of cannabis news. It's phenomenal. All that said, Javier, really, really excited for our guest today. We have Sumo Snacks CEO Caroline Yee. Let's bring her on over, Aaron. Welcome, Caroline. How are you today? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ooh, I love your zip-up hoodie. I'm always looking for swag, right? I'm always like looking to expand my swag. It's like when I look at company stores, I was on another store the other day and they had like a fleece. It's like $65. And I was like, maybe later. With that said, Caroline, thanks again for joining us. TMI for Elliot's Day Today. Tell us a little bit about you, your journey into cannabis, and how you landed at Sumo.
So I've been in cannabis for 7.5 years. I started at Bloom Farms, moved over to Kiva, and I've been running Sumo Snacks for 2.5 years now.
Phenomenal. I love the name, by the way. Very casual, very chill. It presents a really nice vibe. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys specialize in?
So we specialize in bringing savory snacks into the cannabis space. So, you know, there are lots of sweet snacks that exist, gummy being dominant and obviously chocolate, but there was a gap in the market for snacks and snacking occasions, and that's where we come in.
And I love it too, right? I've argued this often, right? Gummies are cool, but to many adults, they're still weird. And again, Elliot will hate on me for this. I also love gummies, like non-medicated gummies. But like a lot of adults.
Who's going to hate on you for liking gummies? Gummies are the best.
No.
Anyways, except for chips and savory snacks. My apologies.
That gummies are weird for adults. But like you're making all kinds of like crackers and cheesy puffs and. You know, where did the idea come from? Like, what's the genesis behind this? And why do you think it isn't being done more widely? Like, if you did a poll among cannabis consumers and asked them, like, sweet or savory, like, for the munchies, at least 50% would say savory, I think, or salty.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely it. I think the reason why you don't see it being done so commonly is, first of all, we in cannabis are really risk averse when it comes to products. So a lot of people aren't willing to be the first ones in the market to actually invest in the production, the technology, and everything like that to develop new products and put it out there. And to be fair, it's quite expensive in order to do that. So a lot of what you'll see is people following on when it's already been established that something's going to succeed, which is exactly what happened to gummies. So that's one of the reasons why I don't think you see a lot of other people doing it, is they're kind of waiting on the sidelines saying, oh, is this going to be an actual category and legitimate thing? And then I'll look into investing into doing it.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about your process for manufacturing some of these goods? Because when I think about your products, you know, with cheesy puffs or other savory snacks, I'm imagining the infusion of the cannabinoids is probably somewhat centric to what you do. Is there a different process? Is it similar to what you saw at Kiva? I'm curious as to that part.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a really simple process, and it's what is done in the chip industry, which makes a lot of sense, which is essentially we do not make the base product themselves. So we don't manufacture tortilla chips and puffs. We actually purchase those. And then what happens is a spray application of distillate and seasoning before it's tumbled and packaged.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. That's actually really cool. Is that spray... your all's IP? Is that your product?
I mean, I don't think it's like an exclusive, it's not specifically IP, but it took us a lot of testing and figuring out how to correctly apply it so that we can hit the potencies here in California.
I'm curious about your celebrity collaborations, right? One is with the famed chef Roy Choi. The other one is with Snoop Dogg. Can you walk us through those two, and maybe if you have others, but like, what are these two collaborations? How do they come to be? How do you even get to them and convince them to do these products?
Yeah, I mean, the Snoop thing came about kind of naturally because our lead investor is Casa Verde. And, you know, Casa Verde is well known because Snoop is the primary LP for their first and second rounds. So we ended up signing an exclusive deal, a separate deal with Snoop in order to work with Sumo Snacks. So that one was a little bit, I'd like to say, easier. So Roy came about.
I've heard that about Snoop, though. Like, he's a hard get. Yeah. So if you want to bring him to a Benzinga conference in Chicago, we won't complain. We'll give you a center spot and stage everything.
I don't think I have the budget to fly him in. But the Roy partnership came about because I'm a huge fan of Roy Choi. I watched a lot of the chef show during COVID. and so Roy is also a great representative and advocate for cannabis usage. He's been using it since he was a teenager. He talks about it publicly. And with our brand, which is really focused on taste and quality, it seemed to make a lot of sense to do a partnership with Roy. So we reached out to his team. Took a while to negotiate, but we ended up coming out with a collaboration on two products with Roy.
That's really cool. Can you give me a little sense of like a bag of cheese puffs? How much THC is in that?
So we have 100 milligrams of THC per bag by law, California, and each serving is 10 milligrams.
Okay. So like how many cheese puffs?
So we can wait. So I know it's difficult because, like, you know, when you're talking about a serving size of chips, they're regularly shaped, some break and things like that. So we actually say it's done by weight.
Okay.
So for example, if we have a 4 ounce bag of our tortilla chips, a serving would be 0.4 ounces.
Okay. That makes sense. So I think the unique thing about what you all are doing is given like the snacky, the munchy side. But I'm curious, is there like, this actually may be more of a question about consumer and trends about what your consumers are wanting, but is there any demand for maybe lighter THC milligram per package? Like, just curious in terms of what your consumers are asking for so that they can eat more, or do they want more THC?
Yeah, you know, what was funny was that when I was at Kiva, that was something that people would ask for, but then there are buying patterns, right? And what people actually purchase. And those are two different things. And when you look at the trends for what people actually purchase, because, you know, at the beginning, when we started off Sumo, our first SKU was actually 10 milligram single serving bag. But overall, that didn't perform super well in the market because people are accustomed to buying 100 milligram bags. And if you look at the data from the California market, it's like 90 to 90%, 95% of all edibles sold are 100 milligram servings. So even though people may say, oh, I wish it was lower dosing and I can eat more, the fact is that that's not what they're buying.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Are they resealable, right? They're like the box are resealable, right?
Absolutely. And that's by law in California.
And also like a smart thing, right? Imagine it. Like if I bought a 100 milligram bag, I wouldn't want to have it all. But at the same time, I wouldn't want like soggy chips in 2 days, right? So
yeah, so that's what we tell people, is just like, is you gotta like take out your serving, put the bag away, and then eat your serving. Otherwise, if you're eating straight out of the bag, then yes, there's the risk that you consume more than you want.
Oh, exactly. Like, here's another one, you know, on going back to Roy Choi, right? One of the things that caught my eye, for instance, is when Forbes reported, for instance, instead of it being one of the cannabis focused contributors, it was a food and cocktail writer, Amber Lovebond. And I know, like, usually when Snoop gets involved in anything related to weed, it still goes mainstream, right? But what was the impact of partnering with Roy specifically? Did you see an increased interest from the culinary world, from the food world? What was the impact on you know, partnering with Roy?
I mean, I think the big impact was we're a California-based brand, and Roy is a California chef, particularly in Los Angeles. I mean, we did our launch at MedMen on Abbot Kinney, and that's where Roy is well known for having his Kogi truck when he was coming up. And so the impact really has been more locally based impact and awareness, particularly in our Los Angeles market, where Roy is basically a hometown hero.
That's awesome. So as a brand in today's market, obviously it's not an easy time. And do you exclusively operate in California?
We do at this time, yes.
Yeah, so it's just a tough time for cannabis. But
oh, it sucks.
It sucks. Thank you. I was sugarcoating it. I shouldn't have been. But that said, Caroline, you're still running what I think it is a great business. You know, you have a very unique model. It seems you know your customer, you know what they want, you know what they buy. And you have what it seems to be a very quick and not easy per se, but process that you've mastered. So all that in consideration, what is next for your growth right now? Is it expansion into other states? Is it going deeper with your current customers in California? More products? Like, what is next for Sumo?
So my answer might be a little surprising for all of you. And my context for that is the, as is well known, you guys cover this all the time, is the California cannabis market is suffering greatly right now. And that's not just California, it's the entire industry. And there need to be really significant changes. The unfortunate thing is as businesses, we don't have a lot of control over those changes. I can't change taxation laws, clearly. I can't change the regulatory environment at all. So there, and those are the two forces that are impacting us the most. So as a business owner, what can I really do to survive in this environment? And the answer is very little. And I think many brands and businesses are discovering that. And obviously, I mean, one of the big examples, which you guys have covered, is Herbal. If a company that's gotten $120 million in funding can't survive in California, then how am I supposed
to? Just talking about doing the news segment.
Exactly. Sure. Like, how am I, as this tiny business, supposed to do it? So my answer is going to be, we are going to be looking at the regulated hemp market.
Nice. Interesting.
Yes. And you'll notice that a lot of beverage companies have started doing this.
Yep.
Particularly in Minnesota, which has really created the most liberal market, although there are many other markets out there. So one of the things with my company that I'm very fortunate about is we partner with Snoop, but that has lent us to create a national brand. And people have been demanding our products since the beginning to get it access to it on a more national level. And current ways the hemp laws are written, it looks, you know, we can give more people access to our products. And at the end of the day, when I look at it, is more access is really what we're trying to achieve overall. And that's always what we've wanted to achieve. And unfortunately, it's not going to happen through the regulated industry the way it is right now.
Mm-hmm. When you say regulated hemp market, and then I know Javi probably have a question.
Same question.
Where are you going with that? CBD, Delta 9, THC?
Delta 9. How does it look like? Delta 9?
Delta 9.
Awesome. So very interesting. I mean, there's some great companies doing that, doing things like that. I think of Happy, you know, I think of Wink, I think of, was it Wonder is another one. There are some really interesting, good products. Yeah. I think one was launched, and Sumo, of course. And I will say, if you ever hit North Carolina, please let me know, because I don't have access to regular weed, let alone really good brands. So, you know, very interesting. So is in your mind, and one more follow-up for me, and then, you know, I'm sure Javi has some more, but in your mind, is there a future where Delta 9 hemp products and the marijuana products can coincide, or do you just not expect federal change to happen? So you are moving in one direction. I'm really curious as to maybe long-term vision there.
So I will say this is long-term vision. Absolutely. And my, you know, when I started in cannabis, my dream was always like, you know, one day cannabis, whether it's hemp derived or, you know, first, there's no distinction. It's the same plant. This is just a distinction that the government has made, right? So, and it's the same molecule, which I try to explain to people. But it was always the dream that one day cannabis will be sold and regulated just like cigarettes or alcohol. So that if I want to go into a CVS and buy cannabis products, I can do that. If I want to do it in a liquor store or grocery store, I can do that. Which, by the way, you can now do in Minnesota. So I do think there will eventually be a merging of these two industries, but it could be 20 or 30 years from now.
Fair.
I'm very curious about your free sample program, which I know is halted at the moment. Like, how does that work? How can you do it? I'm curious.
It's not medicated.
Oh, it's not medicated.
So yeah, exactly.
You try the product itself to figure out if you like the taste, and then go like, okay, I'm good to get high with this.
Yeah, and the thing is our product, because of the way it's dosed over serving size, it actually, you can't really taste the cannabis in it. So the unmedicated products taste basically the same as the medicated ones. So that's why we did that free sampling program. Unfortunately, when the Snoop product came out, the demand skyrocketed, and we just hit a point where we couldn't handle it anymore.
And the other one is, you know, I know that you're working with our Dream Academy. Can you tell us a little bit about that initiative, what it entails, who you're looking to help, and what is the commitment itself?
Yeah, so our Academy runs a program essentially for people who are looking to open or start cannabis businesses. So equity applicants and people who just don't have equal access to many of the resources. So we've been an evergreen supporter of Our Dream, Our Academy, and they have a cohort that comes in every year. Right now the cohort is focused on New York, but previously it was open to essentially all businesses in the US. And they put them through like this pretty rigorous online course covering all topics from like regulations, product, marketing, sales, to really support them and help them create businesses in the cannabis industry.
Wonderful. Caroline, we are at the end of our time here, but is there anything that we haven't covered that's just on your mind as a brand, as an operator in California, in the US? Is there something that you just really feel like cannabis investors and professionals should be thinking about on a day-to-day basis?
You know, we here in California and the cannabis industry overall have been really down in the dumps. And yes, we're going through a really tough period. But the thing that I try to keep in mind and that I remind everyone is, for California, we're only in year 5 of a brand new industry. And we're not going to figure an industry out in 5 years. It's going to take us a while. And yes, it could require us to like tear it all down and start all over, which at this point, I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. but overall, California still has the largest cannabis market in the world. Mm-hmm. And what we continue to see, which I never expected when I started in this industry 7.5 years ago, is a continued legalization expansion of access, not just in the United States, but globally. So I have great faith that we will eventually figure things out. It's just, maybe it's just not today.
Yes. Well, we're waiting for sumo snacks in Argentina.
And North Carolina. Bring them to us, Caroline. Let's go. But Caroline, thank you so much for being here with us today. Caroline, the CEO of Sumo Snacks, really excited for what you guys are going to be doing. You're operating smart. You guys are expanding. It's going to be exciting. So keep us up to date. We'll have you on again, Caroline, but thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Javi, very insightful interview, man. I mean, there's some great innovation in this space, dude. You know, you don't even have to go that far to look for it.
Someone on LinkedIn is asking for the product in Texas as well, by the way.
Yeah, Texas. There you go. In the 3 medical marijuana dispensaries they have. However, Delta 9 hemp. There you go. Awesome. Javier, always a pleasure, my friend. Really appreciate it. Thanks to everybody who tuned in across the show. Please share with your friends. Download our podcast, like and subscribe. Let us know what you think. Love us, hate us. It always helps us bring the content that you want to you. With that said, Javi, as always, man, we'll see you again next time. Peace.